Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today. What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
You know, it's kind of funny because it's going to come full circle, but I think CoverGirl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A P&G brand, by the way.
I did a brand launch on CoverGirl too, which was amazing and fun. That's probably one of my most fun jobs. But yeah, I think so because, I don't know, it was aspirational, I guess, when I was younger.
I'm surprised we don't hear CoverGirl more because it was the first mass brand, really. It was everywhere. The advertising was great.
Right.
But we don't hear that. We don't hear it that much on the show. It's interesting. Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it.
My guest today in the CMO podcast is Michelle Froh, the Global Chief Marketing and Innovation Officer at the Educational Testing Service, or ETS. ETS is the largest private educational assessment organization in the world, serving about 50 million people a year in 200 countries. You probably know them better for their products, which includes the GRE admission test for graduate and professional school, and the TOEFL tests, which prepare students for university study and immigration. ETS was founded way back in 1947 with headquarters in Princeton, New Jersey. Michelle is a veteran brand builder. She began her career in the 1990s in manufacturing with Procter & Gamble. We will talk about her time on the plant floor. And then she switched over to brand management at P&G, where she worked in beauty care. She left P&G after almost 18 years to work for Kimberly-Clark in Asia, then returned to the U.S. to work in senior marketing roles at Samsung and MetLife. About a year ago, Michelle moved to the nonprofit sector with ETS. This woman radiates good energy, which is where we will begin this podcast. This is my conversation with a very joyful and radiant Michelle Froh.
Michelle, welcome to the CMO podcast. We keep seeing each other at industry events and talking for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. So it's so good to spend about an hour with you on this show. So welcome, and it's so good to see you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. I actually have been looking forward to this for so long. This is amazing to spend this much time with you. I agree. Much too short.
I do want to start with one thing that always strikes me about you, and I've seen you in lots of different situations, is your incredible positive energy. And even today, I see it in your face. So I just want to start. Do you hear that comment a lot from people?
Well, first of all, that's such a nice compliment.
No, I mean it.
Thank you. Yeah, I do think I feel like I get that nice compliment a lot. And, you know, it's funny that you say that, too, because one of the things that really was impactful in my life, actually being a corporate athlete trainer. And I did that when I was at P&G. And there's this energy that is limitless, right? It's not about time management or anything like that. It really is about creating energy. And I feel like when you're around people that create that or that have that energy, it's contagious, right? And I love to be in situations like that.
We haven't talked about the corporate athlete program on the show before. So tell our listeners a little bit about, because I have been through it as well. So tell them a bit about what it is and why it had such an impact on you.
It's a program that should help you focus on what's most important, but really what you want to be extraordinary at. And I think it's that word extraordinary that helps you figure out, I can't be extraordinary at everything, even though I kind of did. I did want to be extraordinary at everything, right? Mm-hmm. And get this 360 feedback, not just from people you work with, but your family, your friends, you know, other influences in your life. And what I realized listening to that feedback was, I'm failing all around. I'm not being extraordinary at anything.
That's a pretty tough revelation.
It was. And so you have to write like a mission statement, a personal mission statement, and then align all of your energy to that mission statement. And for me, it always was, you know, I want to be extraordinary at everything, period. And I realized, nope, that's not a period and it's not everything. There's only a handful of things that you can be extraordinary at and put all your energy towards. So it's a great program to help you think about from a physical standpoint, how do you create more energy from a mental standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, and then finally from a spiritual standpoint, how do you have that energy to go achieve those handful of things that you want to be extraordinary at. So you have to change, you have to put some rituals in place mm-hmm. in order to change habits. And it really has helped me be more focused and engaged, I think, in those things I really want to do, and probably more present too, you know, with the people that really matter to you.
Where did you come out in terms of where you wanted to be extraordinary?
Well, I came out at mother, wife. Probably cheated a little bit by saying, you know, daughter/sibling, you know, but I'm amongst my broader family, friends and business leader.
That's still a lot, right?
Still a lot. But there were some things that, you know, kind of have to fall off. Like, I'm not extraordinary at golf, even though I love it.
You have such a positive outlook and you're always radiant. I just want to know, do you ever have bad days or setbacks? And what do you do to bounce back from those with your kind of personality?
Of course, always bad days. And, you know, I've had a lot of setbacks. I would say I look for creative ways to find a door that you can open and let in some sunshine, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think also that I look for ways to be calm in the chaos. I have a saying of like, I try and be like a duck and, you know, very calm on the surface, but I am always paddling underneath rapidly. You know, when I do have a bad day like that, it's usually because there's a lot coming at you or a lot coming at me, and I get a little bit overwhelmed and take a breath, be like a duck, you know, get your positive energy back.
Well, this show, we're talking about our shared history, and we're going to do a bit more of that. But you are making history at your company right now, doing a major brand relaunch, which probably hasn't been done for a very long time.
You're right.
Well, we're going to talk about that. But I think I want to continue a little bit with our shared history.
Yeah.
We actually both, as you know, but our listeners likely don't, we both launched our business careers with the same company, P&G. You started, however, in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I started in brand management, which is what P&G, that's what the marketing function is at P&G. This was like the mid-90s, I suspect, right? When you started in manufacturing.
Right.
I want you to talk, you came out of Iowa State with a degree in engineering. What was it like to be a young woman working in a manufacturing plant, a Procter & Gamble manufacturing plant, which in the mid-90s, my guess, they were 90% plus male?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what that was like to be a woman in a manufacturing plant way back in the 90s.
Boy, I have a lot of stories. I don't know. I don't know how many I can tell you. And
pick the best.
Someone for work, but but it was challenging. But I also would say so growthful in so many ways. And when I think back to those formative years, I'm so grateful to have had all the experiences I had at P&G across my 18 years there, not just in the plant.
What plant were you in?
Iowa City, the Iowa City plant. We made all the hair care products, Scope, mouthwash, and Dentifrice, which is toothpaste. Okay. I didn't know it was called that when I started there, but so all the Crest and everything. You know, I was lucky enough to have an internship at P&G at the same plant. So I had a little bit of a taste of what it was going to be like. But you're right, there were very few women, but there were some amazing women leaders in that plant. And I think, you know, the values that a company like P&G has really pervaded the entire organization. It didn't matter if you were at a plant or my experiences at some of the other more corporate environments. And one of those values I really feel was grooming and caring and coaching for the bench below, right? Mm-hmm. And because P&G was such a promote from within culture, you can't afford not to care about the people who work for you or in your organization or around you. In fact, yeah, you know this, Jim. I mean, you got rated on 50% of what you did and your results, and 50% on how you did it and your organizational capability. And so I think about the leader I hope I am and today, and how it was formed, you know, from some of those experiences, especially I had in the plant. You know, one, I think, is solving problems under pressure, kind of coming back to being a duck. Mm-hmm. When a manufacturing line is down, that's not a good thing. People are very agitated. But, you know, you do need a very disciplined approach of how to solve problems. I think it's where I also learned the value and appreciation of a team, while also figuring out, you know, how do you lead teams? And frankly, manage people that maybe have more technical expertise than you do. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, always been in roles, even in my current role today, where I have brilliant people that work on my team, but that doesn't mean I can do their job. I mean, they are much more, you know, skilled from a practitioner standpoint, whether that's AI engineers or my marketing science folks, you know, et cetera. So I think that was an amazing one. But then also managing multiple priorities. You know, in a plant, you have safety and reliability mm-hmm. and quality and cost and people capacity and capability. And all those things, you want to go in the right direction. And sometimes it's like whack-a-mole because you're trying to figure out, like, how am I going to get all this stuff to go in the right direction? And so it was really good training, I think about being a business leader, too, where you have all those factors going around. But I would also say thank goodness for the supportive people that were there, whether that was people on my team or people that were in our leadership groups, et cetera. Because, you know, I walked in, I was 22, and P&G mm-hmm. gives you a lot of responsibility. I had my first role, I had 35 people on my team. Most all of them were men, and I think they were 35 plus. So I popped in, hi, I'm your new boss. And I will not say what they said back.
Were you dressed in like a crest blue jumpsuit or something like that?
So it toughened me up, I think, a little bit as a leader. I'm not going to lie. There was some very tough moments, mm-hmm. but, you know, I had the support of some of the leaders. I mean, and in fact, the real leaders on the team. And again, I think, you know, just a real life lesson of how you connect with people, teams, and be a leader that not because someone gave you the title, but because you figure out, how do I remove barriers? What value do I have that I can give this team and really, I think, earn it?
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. So tell us a story of how you went from manufacturing at the plant in Iowa City to come into brand management, which, yeah, at P&G was the place where most of the senior executives come from. But it's also a hard career path, right? Manufacturing, you can be in certain roles for a whole career. And in brand management, if you're not moving forward, you're moving out of the company. So tell us why that attracted you. Who brought you over? Did you ask for it? Was it something that was brought to you? So tell us that story.
So in the plant, I had the opportunity to kind of move to different assignments. And one assignment I had was being a startup leader. And that's kind of, I mean, first of all, it's kind of a cool title. But secondly, it was like you got to work with the multifunctional teams on bringing new initiatives to the market, to the plant as well. And we had to start up equipment that made these new products. I mean, I guess I was a little bit sheltered being in the plant for a few years that I was like, oh my gosh, there's people that talk to customers, like, you know, like the Walmarts of the world. And there's people that talk to like consumers. Like it was crazy. And so I was like, wow, that's super cool. I want to know more about that work. So I did my MBA at night and I took such an interest in marketing and really consumer insights and how you delight consumers, et cetera. And that's where my interest came from. Now, when you're at P&G and you try and go from a function to function, P&G absolutely supports that. But going into marketing was like, you know, it didn't matter that you really worked at P&G. They treated me like I came in off the street, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So rigorous panel interviews, et cetera. And I think I was very fortunate that it was Diana Shaheen who actually brought me in to P&G. And she has a very similar background coming from.
Yeah, she started manufacturing. Yep.
Manufacturing over. And my first brand was Physique, which doesn't exist anymore. It was a brand ahead of its time.
It was a good brand, by the way. I think we blew that one.
It really was.
Yeah.
And I would say that, to your point, it's not an easy transition, even if you're at the same company, because in the beginning, people will tend to put you where your strengths are versus want you so you can have some wins, you know, versus maybe push you in some other areas. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I got the critical path schedule jobs of go be the leader of this initiative, but, you know, keep all of the other functions, you know, in line and lead the cross-functional team and those kind of things. And I was like, that's great. And it's really fun. And I love it. Can I also do some advertising?
You eventually got to that, I hope.
We did. Yes, of course. Of course. But it was a great transition. I'm very happy I made the move. And at P&G too, so many opportunities to do marketing from different angles, whether that was design marketing, working upstream on new products with R&D to delivery marketing and P&L to shopper marketing back when that was just being born and, you know, really pioneering that effort.
Now, we started our careers in business at P&G, and we were together, I don't know, a few months ago in Miami, I believe, and you discovered that I had a summer internship back in my 20s at ETS, which is where you are now the CMO. And we laughed a lot about that. You said you were going to try to find my old picture and all that, which I don't think God you have found my old picture. I hope not.
No, I still am looking. I'm going through the archives, Jim. But that is so much of a coincidence, right?
It is a coincidence.
So crazy.
I want to
hear about like your experience at ETS.
That's another interview. I did have a blast, I have to say. I was brought in. They had a number of workbooks they wanted to take to market. And I was kind of studying brand management at business school. And so I came in. I was the brand manager of a bunch of their learning manuals. So I actually had to develop the concept behind them and go out and start pitching them to the major book wholesalers in the country. And I did a great job. And I had a really, really great time meeting everyone. And I traveled a lot that summer. So it kind of was an affirmation that I liked this kind of work because I was coming out of an editorial background. But I really had fun with the culture. I enjoyed living in Princeton. So I just loved everything about it. But my question for you is, if I were to walk through the building today, right? Now, you weren't there way back then, but what would be really different? How has this organization evolved over the past couple of decades? What would I see and feel that would be really, really different from a few decades ago?
Well, you know what I'm going to start with, Jim, is probably what is not different. And that is an organization of people that are so committed to a mission. ETS is a 75-year-old company, and that mission was really rooted in helping people be successful. And everyone here, like, you feel the mission. And I've always worked at companies like P&G and Kimberly-Clark and MetLife and others that have a purpose. It makes a difference when you're working on a brand and a company that is purpose-driven, as I know you know very well. But working for a company that has a mission, it's almost like to the next level. And so, you know, we care about how we do as a company, you know, because no money, no mission. but we care about the impact that we make in the world too. And so, you know, to have that be really a driving force for everyone to rally around is a very different feeling. I don't think that's changed since you've been here. Mm-hmm. What I do think might have changed is this is a company, and this is why I joined TS, that needed to do a business transformation. And so it's a company that's probably more global than maybe it was when you were there. Definitely less centered, if you will, here in Princeton, even though, you know, there are a lot of people that work here. We have hubs all around the world, offices all around the world, and we impact, you know, 50 million learners around the world every year in over 200 countries. You know, big impact. I would say now, I hope, this business transformation that we've been doing, we also have a brand transformation that's just starting to happen. It's going to be just in a few days. And the passion that people have and the pride for that new brand has been overwhelming, actually. I mean, I've never been part of something so exciting. So I think that might be a little bit different. Although I will say the reputation ETS has had, you know, has always been a point of pride, and that has been unwavering throughout the years.
Now let's talk about this brand relaunch. It's happening sort of as we speak. And another great reason this is a great time to have you on the show. Tell us why you decided you needed to relaunch the brand. Educational Testing Service, ETS, the name has been the same for 75 years. But why did you choose to do it? What was the business reason for it? And what are you learning in the process? Because we're really right at the beginning of it.
First, I would say that the landscape has changed a lot. Standardized testing is definitely something that has helped people in the past, right? Because it's a proven and valid method to help people show what they know. Mm-hmm. And what's exciting is transforming this business and really redefining the category, I would say, to utilize new technology, particularly AI technology, so that experts like us can advance that science of measurement, so that assessments can help people also show what they can do. And that's really through more skill-based assessments and being able to measure what we would call durable skills, you know, leadership skills, communication skills, empathy, creative problem solving, those kinds of things. And so that's where we feel there's a lot of not only growth potential, but a huge need that people have to continue to be lifelong learners in their lives and continue to upskill, reskill, be ready, you know, for the future. So I would say, first and foremost, we had to start with a strategic vision of what the business transformation needed to be. Mm-hmm. This role that I have is a new role. I've only been here about a year now. And so, of course, people got excited when I came in and they were like, okay, Michelle, are you going to change our logo? Change our logo. And yeah, I was like, I am not going to be the CMO that comes in, just changes the logo. Yeah. We're going to start with the business first, right? And so, you know, my first few months here was really working with our leadership team, helping to develop what that strategic vision really was and articulating that. Then helping the whole organization to understand that as well. And so we did a lot of deployment sessions, interactive deployment sessions with our employees, et cetera. And then I felt now we're ready for a brand transformation, because now we've defined, you know, this business that we want to be in the next 3 to 5 years. And now we need a future forward brand that matches that, and we can start to build our way there. You brought up another really interesting point, Jim, and I'm sure you've lived through this as well. I really leaned on the 5 E's of leadership on developing this new brand, I will say, right? It was a very engaging. So the envision part was really the strategic vision, right? Yep. And then had to engage the entire company and key stakeholders along the way, including our board, in what this brand transformation could look like. So, you know, enrolling, engaging, listening to customer feedback, co-creating and designing together along the way.
So what kind of customers were you talking to? Because your customers of ETS of the past 5 years has been people involved in educational testing and assessment.
Correct.
And your new vision is to expand your offerings, I'm reading into this, which will be some new customers. So who would they be?
I would say our brand portfolio is like in three sections. And the first group, we've been known for the research, the groundbreaking research that we do to help set and build benchmarks for that others, you know, that we use, but also others use, you know, to source their work and validity. And that group is still a very important group of what I would call customers. You know, it's kind of like B to W, business to the world, right? And so there are other researchers, there are policymakers, there's investors. Having people invest in our research is so important to continue to move the needle on our mission. That's part of our corporate brand, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then there's another aspect of our corporate brand where, you know, we've had clients mainly in the governments. So ETS does the Nation Scorecard, for example, also the PISA report in conjunction with OECD. And so, you know, governments that are trying to assess status and opportunities to help their societies prosper. But there's also other spaces that we want to help people show kind of their progress and what they can do. And that's with licensing and credentialing services, you know, so we have our teacher licensing with Praxis. We recently acquired a company called PSI, and they do credentialing and licensing in so many interesting fields, you know, from pilots to air traffic controllers, drone operators, barbers, insurance salesmen or salespeople, I should say, you know, other data scientists, all sorts of credentialing areas and licensing areas. And then, of course, you know, employers. And I would say that's kind of the new, those two areas are the newer B2B space, where if we're really trying to help people and lifelong learners progress. And people are going to need that, not just in the education space. They're going to need that throughout their lives to upskill, reskill, and, you know, be able to drive their own well-being and their own prosperity.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So, what do you do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com. This is a much different vision for the company, right, that you're talking about than the company that I worked for, you know, a couple decades ago. You're only a year in the job, so you come in and everyone's excited that you're going to change the logo and you kind of reframe that for them. You work with your team to create a very different business strategy, different vision for the company, and your market size is massively bigger than the market you were competing in historically, the so-called TAM.
Right.
How did you do all that in a year? A, you have to come in, get to know people, understand the business, build some credibility, help set a new vision, align everyone on it, and then start to rebrand, which you're now starting. So just talk a little bit about how you're able to, I know you're a very positive person. We began the podcast on that, but how did you do this as a leader? And let's just tell us a little bit about how you achieved so much in this year.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I would throw in that, Jim, and looking back, I'm like, wow, I'm actually kind of surprised at how much we've gotten done. It's been a very busy year.
Yeah, it sounds like
and
it.
And a very exciting year. I mean, again, I think that energy feeds on top of each other. And it's like, you can't stop, you can't slow down. It's so much fun. But the other aspect that I would throw in is I actually was building a new organization at the same time. What really excited me about this opportunity was that it wasn't just a CMO role. It's really a CMO plus role. I'm actually Global Chief Marketing and Innovation Officer. So I have end-to-end marketing functions as well as our product and innovation team as well. And I think coming from like a P&G or Kimberly-Clark and all my other backgrounds, that makes sense. Like, of course you would develop products and commercialize them, right? That's an end-to-end process. But it isn't a natural muscle for this organization, or it hasn't been. And so this group, pulling this group together, building different connections across the group, setting an ambition for our division to really look forward and have a reason and feel like, you know, we're together was also a big chunk of work to do at the same time of, you know, thinking about a brand. And then also how that strategic vision really and the brand really impacts our product and innovation development plans and what those roadmaps should look like now that we're playing in a bigger space. So how did I do it? I leaned on a lot of people, both in my organization, but across the organization, and particularly my executive leadership team cohorts, because I honestly have not worked with a group of people for a long time that have been so collaborative, so energized by change. And that's what energizes me too. I love transformation. I mean, it's like living life on a startup curve, you know, and I love to do that. And that's where I get my energy. But enrolling people and grabbing them along as well, I think just fed the energy a little bit. So as I was telling you, we were enrolling people along the way. And on Leap Day this year, we said, we're going to have a internal kind of top brand ambassador deployment of our new brand. We're going to leap into a new ETS on Leap Day.
Very nicely done. Very clever.
And we spent the whole day from 9 to 5, spent the whole day on our new brand. And that has never been done here before.
What was that agenda like?
You know what? It was a very interactive agenda on purpose. So we started with, of course, the ta-da anthem video that is I'm just in love with, and the whole room was like, yes, I want to work there. And then we built the components of the brand and explain them, you know, in detail so that people really understood who are the customers we're going after, what are all the total brand system elements from our promise to the outcomes we want to put in the world to, you know, our brand values, et cetera, before we even got to any visual or verbal expression.
Sounds like a P&G training, by the way, Michelle.
I might have stolen a playbook. Yeah. And then we took a pause and we broke up into groups and actually asked people like, so what else can we do? Internal activation plans, external activation plans, ask people to build on them, ask people to change them, et cetera. We also did a really cool exercise, which was like the brand tango, where we thought about ourselves with another brand and what would you do differently to partner, you know, with this brand? I think we got some really good business ideas out of that exercise. That was one of our favorites. And of course, we trained people to be brand ambassadors. And what does that mean? It means when people ask you, just like you did, you know, tell me a little bit more about ETS, people automatically go, it's educational testing service. Well, no. I mean, yes, that's our title, but we're ETS and we're a different brand an organization. And so having people practice that and talk to each other and use, you know, message toolbox tools and things like that to actually practice what does it mean to be this new ETS and how do I help communicate that in the world was incredibly powerful. So I literally, I know my team did such an amazing job. It was unbelievable. And we all floated out of that room.
What kind of activations will we see of this new ETS that you're most excited about, you're most proud of? You know, if we were talking about a relaunch of whatever, Pantene or Olay, we talk about, oh, it's going to be, you know, a new sampling program or maybe a new sponsorship or maybe some really, really interesting content they put out in lots of channels. So when you talk about activating a new ETS, what sorts of things are you talking about?
So we have some really exciting things. We participate in a lot of big industry gatherings, mm-hmm. and we're going to show up as a new ETS there. We have a lot of folks on speaking panels and things like that. In addition, you'll see two thought leadership papers that will come out. One will come from ETS Research Institute, which is all about the future of assessments and this real need, right, for more skill-based assessments. And, you know, we really hope that generates conversations about policies and more research needed, new types of products and services that need to be developed, et cetera. And then the second one is called the Human Progress Report. This is a study that we did partnership with Harris Poll on 17 countries, 17,000 people across lots of different social, economic, and global dimensions. And there's some very interesting insights in that thought leadership paper. And we found that there's like three factors that really impact building prosperous societies and human progress. And what does human progress really mean in people's eyes? And, you know, we found that there's three foundational pillars of focus there: accessing education, pursuing upward mobility, and then engaging in upskilling and reskilling. And so we looked at how difficult is it for people to achieve these factors in those areas and those countries. So surprisingly, 8 out of 10 global citizens said that they see themselves as a lifelong learner, and it's really core to their well-being and their prosperity. Also, over 80% of people believed that a formal education is necessary, you know, to succeed in today's world. However, they need to continue that learning and show progress so that they can continue to be successful and match the pace of today's times. So with that, we're going to have our first ETS convening the end of April in DC, and we're going to bring together a lot of thought leaders to talk about these subjects, including responsible AI and the future of skills. And so we'll have two tracks with amazing thought leaders where we'll show up, you know, as a new ETS in that. And then lastly, I would say maybe check out some media on April 9th and beyond.
Oh my.
Going to have some really fun executions that will happen. And we'll point you to our new website, which is really where our entire brand comes together. And that'll be a piece that we hope our customers are able to find and navigate much easier and have a much better customer experience.
So ETS advertising, we're going to see ETS advertising.
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, did you change the logo after all this?
We did change the logo. Right. Okay.
But is it the end of the process?
You can see it on that little cookie behind me.
I thought that might be it. Okay, Michelle, listen, I want to talk about your career path really briefly before we move into the creator brief. And thanks for sharing all that in the brand relaunch. I mean, super fascinating. You have me intrigued. I'll be on the watch out. My radar's up.
Yes.
Hey, you worked for some really interesting companies, right? Your career path. But you worked for Samsung at the time when the Note 7 crisis happened. And we were talking a bit about that a while ago. I mean, that's one of the epic brand crises of the last decade, maybe ever, where a market leader in phones, what they started catching on fire. They even caught on fire in airplanes, if I remember all that correctly.
That's right.
You were in the middle of all that. Very few CMOs go through that kind of experience. What did you learn about yourself and about handling a crisis when that happened?
Well, I definitely put that be a duck.
Yeah, but yeah, those feet were moving very quickly. The wings were probably going too.
Trying to use the water to put out the fire. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, I definitely learned that don't want brand advertising on planes, you know, where everyone's saying if you have a Samsung Note 7, you have to get it off the plane. That wasn't fun. So many good lessons. I mean, really, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's definitely a way to get an MBA in crisis management. It takes collaboration and to the next level. I cannot tell you how many nights, and when I say nights, I mean into the wee hours of the nights, and day after day after day after day, we spent together as a PMO and a lead team. And part of it was, you know, I mean, a lot of the work was happening in Korea. And so we had to be able to communicate and collaborate across the globe when we didn't know all the information, they didn't know all the information, and how do we problem solve in an effective way? So that was a lot. I mean, you definitely need a lot of energy to get through that.
You leaned on the corporate athlete.
Definitely. You know, the other one is, not that I, you know, needed a reminder about how to collaborate, but I think it was a great reminder that sometimes you can get very focused and narrow and forget about the other functions that you impact or should be impacting and collaborating with. And at Samsung, that actually was the customer service department. You know, we had a great leader over there, they had a great team, but marketing didn't really interact with them very much. All of a sudden, we needed to a lot. And what came out of it were incredibly cool initiatives and programs that we ended up launching together after all of that, right? So I was like, wow, that's really, why did we not talk before? You guys are amazing. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, new ideas were generated. And then I think the last learning I had was, you have to dig in with your customers. You know, Samsung's it's a big company. And I think the leadership team, at least where we were, hadn't had like exposure to like real customers. And so as part of our brand rebuild, which we did in a year, which was like crazy, like we were down here and then we were back up to the same level within a year. Part of it was because we did some interesting customer initiatives where we actually brought customers in the fold. We had a whole customer meeting that was a webinar and with real customers in the audience with our leadership team answering questions. Even if we didn't have the answers, at least we understood what was on people's minds. Led to interesting campaigns where there were a lot of haters out there. And how did we use our lovers? Note 7 were the most loyal customers that Samsung had. And how did we use their love to kind of combat some of that negativity in the market? And so it's such a great learning. I'm very glad that I lived through it. But most importantly, I'm glad I lived through it with the team that we had. You know, sometimes I think when you're in the trenches and you're on the same side of the battle, yeah, you make sure lifelong friends that friendship just doesn't die.
Yeah, that's a silver lining, right?
Yeah.
And learning new things about yourself, right? Getting together with the customer service, bringing consumers and customers into your conversations and your process. I mean, these are things that you can apply to any brand at any time.
Definitely. Yeah, there's insights. Customer insights live everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just in market reports.
Yeah. All right. First question in the creative brief. You have 2 degrees from Iowa schools. You were getting your MBA at night when you were working at the plant. What is your deep connection to Iowa?
I don't know if I have one. I think that's just where I ended up. I actually, my dad was in the Air Force. So we moved around a lot. We lived in Germany and California, Texas. Most of my school years were in Illinois, but my dad did go to Iowa State, I guess. So even though I looked at a lot of other schools, I loved the engineering program at Iowa State. And in fact, it was one of the counselors I talked to who encouraged me to be a mechanical engineer because I wanted to be an astronaut, actually, which obviously I'm not.
Well, you don't know. Right? You have an interesting career path. Maybe that's next.
But she said, you should be a mechanical engineer and you could operate the robotic arm. And I was like, really? Okay, that sounds like a good idea. And then I don't know what happened along the way. I had an internship at Alcoa. I had an internship at P&G. And then I stayed in Iowa at the plant.
You found shampoo more exciting than astronauts, right?
That is true.
So what's the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
You know, I think it's kind of funny because it's going to come full circle, but I think CoverGirl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A P&G brand, by the way.
It was. I know. I did a brand launch on CoverGirl too, which was amazing and fun. That's probably one of my most fun jobs. But yeah, I think so because, I don't know, it was aspirational, I guess, as when I was younger.
I'm surprised we don't hear CoverGirl more because it was the first mass brand, really. It was everywhere. The advertising was great.
Right.
It was at a price point that almost anyone could afford. But we don't hear that. We don't hear it that much on the show. It's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. You have lots of side hustles. As I look through how you spend your time, you're on lots of industry boards. You're the chair of a consultancy in Singapore. Go figure. So I just want to know, how's all that help you be a better CMO, a better leader, a better person?
I think it helps a ton. For one, I think that, you know, again, any company you're in or any job that you're in, I tend at least to get very focused. And when you do that, you get somewhat insular, right? And so forcing yourself to be out in the industry or even outside of the industry, like I'm on the Rye Art Center board, for example, and I don't know that much about arts, but it strikes a lot of curiosity with me. It, you know, builds community, things like that. And I get energized by and inspired by connecting with people that aren't necessarily doing the same thing I'm doing or that I can learn from or have a connection with. It just keeps me from being too insular, really. And so that's the main thing. The Brandable is the consultancy that I own, but I, you know, obviously I don't work there right now. It's running. But during my time there, while I was in Singapore, I was a fractional CMO. And again, I think that really scratches an itch from a curiosity standpoint too, because one of the things I've loved about my career is that I've been able to take frameworks, thought processes, knowledge, and apply them into new situations and new problems. And I think be successful, but successful in like a faster startup curve a little bit, because it keeps you on your toes of like always not just being in the same place, same challenges, same everything, and really widening your thinking. So I've loved that. I also, for example, being co-chair of the Marketing Society, it's a global society. And I've always loved global roles. Mm-hmm. I've lived internationally with my family, and having another piece of inspiration of diversity of thought, I think, and keeping yourself relevant on, you know, those global trends and global issues is helpful to me, but then really helpful to me in this role where we are so global, but yet we have to be very local from an execution standpoint. And so that's part of my ambition for my team is really to be customer obsessed, global. I've had to underline that word because people keep changing it and trying to make it global. And I'm like, no, it's on purpose. It's global.
Put it in the t-shirt. That's the word.
Exactly.
So what is your advice to our listeners who would love to have your level of positive energy? What's your one piece of advice?
Look forward and envision what it is that you want and dig deep and find the energy to go get it. Nothing's impossible. You might take some twisty, I certainly have taken a lot of twisty roads, but I always say, you know, put your seatbelt on and strap in and get ready for the twists and turns because that's actually where the fun is in life. And you can be positive about that. Go have some fun.
Who's been the most inspiring person in your life?
it's been a multitude of people. I think I've had some amazing bosses that are coaches that have inspired me to do what I didn't think I could. And then I would say the other area is, I mean, definitely my husband for over 30 years and my kids, because I'm like, they never tell me no. All my crazy ideas of things I want to go do or try, they always support me. And I think, you know, that's inspiring as well. It's hard not to say no.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Michelle, this has been so good. And thank you, thank you, thank you for everything. It's been great to connect more than 10 minutes. And it's been a great story and full of inspiration, full of joy, and full of positive energy, as I knew it would be.
Thank you, Jim. That really makes me happy. It's been such a pleasure to be here. And I mean, you can see in the back of me here too on the books. Your book is up on the top shelf.
Oh, I do see it. I do see it. Oh, thank you.
I know. You're definitely one of my, I should have answered that. You're the one who's inspired me, Jim.
Oh, come on. Cut. It's a wrap.
I know, but you've been such a positive force out there too. And so I really appreciate being here and being able to share some stories.
That was my conversation with Michelle Froh. Three takeaways from this one for your business, brand, and life. The first one, wow, this was such a lesson in defining marketing broadly as a business driver and a strategy driver. Michelle's scope is broad. She has innovation in her remit, but she went through her experience at ETS, where it began with a business vision, began with a business strategy. She engaged the leadership team, and she only then moved to what the brand relaunch would be after they did all the work about where they wanted to take the future of the company. This was a really, really great lesson in defining marketing broadly. And I think when you do that, the business results follow. Second takeaway, the full engagement of your organization in a brand relaunch. Michelle talked about Leap Day and how the organization went away for a full day to fully immerse themselves in the brand direction, the brand restage, the activations, soliciting ideas. They focused on brand ambassadors. For everyone who is relaunching a brand or renewing a brand, be sure you fully engage your organization and you make it fun, engaging, and creative. Third takeaway, Michelle is an extremely externally focused person. She is on lots of industry boards. She's the owner of a consulting firm. She gets outside her comfort zone, her normal business remit. She gets outside of her company a lot and benefits greatly from the learning that she brings back to help her be a better leader within the company, ETS.
That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production. Episodes of the CMO Podcast are produced by Gallery Media Group. The views and opinions expressed by podcast speakers and guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of our sponsors or its personnel, nor do our sponsors advocate or endorse any individuals or entities featured on the episodes.